Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking, a mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
Hello and welcome to the Hacker Factory. I'm your host, Philip Wiley. I refer to myself as the Hacker Maker because I have a passion for teaching, mentoring, and helping people get started in defensive cybersecurity. Each episode, I have a really cool guest on talking about how they got into the industry, sharing their story and tips on getting started. And so today, I'm really excited to have my friend Maxie Reynolds on. Welcome to the show, Maxie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I don't know where to start.
Yeah. So why not, you know, most people have been in the industry probably are aware of you and your new book, but for those that don't know, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
So obviously my name is Maxie. I got into social engineering and ethical hacking in, I suppose, a quite circuitous way. I worked offshore for about 10 years as a ROV pilot, remotely operated vehicle pilot. So it's just we built robots that sort of go deep into the ocean to about 14,000 feet sometimes, and really my job was to survey pipelines, install subsea structures. And when you're offshore on platforms for 1 month at a time for 6 months of the year, you have a lot of time. You have a lot of time off and you have a lot of time on the rig. So I ended up with a degree, a long distance degree in computer science. And then the day rate started to drop drastically and there wasn't quite as much fun in the job anymore. I'd done it for about 10 years and it was just becoming a hassle. So I moved down to Australia. I was really, really lucky. PwC offered me a job on their cybersecurity team, and I definitely did not repay them very well. I was down there and I shut off a city's water as they were trying to teach me how to hack. There was a few faux pas. There were a few mistakes that I made there, but they definitely taught me cybersecurity and they taught me ethical hacking. Then I come back to America, and from Los Angeles, I launched a company that dealt with high-profile, high-net-worth individuals. And I quickly realized that was just not the right route for me. I didn't enjoy it too much. So I ended up getting in touch with Chris Hadnagy, who owns Social Engineer. And I worked there for about a year and a half, 2 years. And we were... He runs sort of the world's most scary team of social engineers, I would say. So there's a few of us, and our jobs, or my job and their job, is to physically, most often, break into buildings, both in the day and in the night. So our job is to get past any defenses that a company has, physical, personnel, electronic, whatever it is, somehow to get past those defenses and show the company how they're vulnerable that way. So we also were doing vision at the time, which is where you call up, say, a bank and try and get into a specific account or try and get information on their clients and things like that. So it's a very underhanded job, or so on the surface, that's what it seems. But of course, what we're actually doing is helping companies build their defenses. So that was a long intro. Thank you for letting me ramble that long.
Well, that's okay, because the show is all about the guests and their story. So thanks for sharing that background. The cool thing I think about when you think about social engineering and physical penetration tests, that's when you really get into more of the spy thing aspect of penetration testing.
You know, there's a, I'd say the coolest people are, there's a division of the FBI, and I think they're called stagehands, and I think that's a category under the Tactical Operations Support Unit. And they carry around their own dust so that when they break into places, they can like re-sprinkle the dust onto things, and they can, they have lasers with them so that if they have to move furniture to place a bug or whatever they're doing in someone's home or office, that they can move the furniture back and make everything look exactly as it is. Because if you think about it, how many times have you walked into a room and someone's moved something and you're like, ah, something's not right here. We have that intuition as humans. So our job isn't as cool as that. We don't get to carry lasers and we don't get to carry dust, but it is akin, it's very alike in terms of how covert we have to be. We can't disturb the natural environment, so to speak, for the most part. So it is really interesting. There's some crossover between spy and agent, but we're just not that cool, really.
Yeah. Some people like that could probably cross over that if they had the chance.
Oh, absolutely. I think a few people that I've worked with over the years, I've often thought, are you agency? You seem a little unhappy, like, but you're so skilled. So yeah, I think a lot of people could cross over. I don't think I could. I would think it was too cool. I'd be calling my mum to say like, oh my god, you should see this job I've just done, and she'd be like, I don't think you should be sharing national security secrets with me, Matt. So yeah.
But it would be, there would be some really cool stuff you'd want to put on Instagram, and you just can't do that.
God, I share far too much on Instagram already, so I don't think they would ever enlist to me. But
yeah, before I forget about it too, you have a really cool Instagram, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I've been trying to make an effort to do something for the community and on Instagram, because I don't natively understand Twitter. So Instagram's my home, but there's not much on there for the security community. It's mainly just pictures. There's a lot of cool things on Instagram, but they're not security centric. So I've been trying to post a lot of OSINT challenges. But if you've followed me in the last month, you've only heard about my book. So I'm sorry. Yes.
Speaking of your book and your Instagram, I think it's really cool the way you laid out the book on your Instagram. So if you look at your account, that's pretty cool.
Thank you. Because I racked my brains for so long about how do you get information out there about a book that's not sort of in a very humdrum way. And so the best I could come up with was 1,000 pictures to make one picture. So thank you. But and then I got someone got me a cake that with the book covered on it, and that, like, I've never had as much love and support from people. They were all just like, I love that cake. Do you have any left? I was like, I'm not going to send you cake. You live in Israel. What? So.
So speaking of the book, so it's kind of cool. So if you would like to talk about your book and kind of your experience writing the book.
So the book is, it's about attacker mindset. It is a certain sort of cross-section of skills and laws that I think you need in order to be a good ethical attacker. The one thing that I will say is putting ethical in front of the word attacker will not stop any unethical, non-ethical people looking at that and taking the information that I've given them. So some people are a little sort of antsy about, should you really be writing this? Especially people typically not in the cyber or information security industries. I think they wonder if it's safe, if it is ethical to teach people how to think like an attacker. And my sort of response to this is always, well, the solution to successfully fending off attacks and staying ahead of them is to be able to think like the people that sort of want to attack us. And I'm not teaching people to be malevolent or corrupt in the book. I'm actually trying to say, here's how to be ethical, here's how to test companies and things like that. So just a caveat for people who might be a bit like, oh, you're teaching people that? So sorry.
Yeah, but I have to think too, because, you know, my background is teaching the subject of ethical hacking. And
yeah,
it seems like to me, if you think back to the old days, back before all this information was ready available, only certain people knew how to find it. And a lot of people with bad intent knew how to find it. So people that were wanting to use it for good had no idea where to find this stuff.
Yeah, so that, I think that's exactly right. There has to be, I don't think there should always be equal opportunity access to items, right? There's some courses in the world where you can only join if you're military or police or in sort of one of those factions. And I think that that's right in a lot of ways, course dependent and material dependent. But this is a mindset, and I don't think we can hold that back from any category of society, from any sort of faction of society. I think if you're interested in it, the information's there. If you're not interested in it, the information is still there for everyone. And it's a sort of, I don't really like adages so much or platitudes, but I'm about to say one. I think that fighting fire with fire sometimes is the way forward. There are times in which thinking like the bad guy will defeat the bad guy. So I think it is important.
Yeah. One of the things that's kind of interesting too, because I've read Chris Hadnagy's books, which are really good. And he kind of took the level and quality of social engineering books up from what was previously there.
For sure. He lives and breathes social engineering though. I've also read his books, and The Fish in Dark Waters is it brings you to a very sort of specific part of the social engineering world, but it's still so important to read. So I think that I've just fed into it myself. I've just given you the coolest parts of the job, right? Hey, we get to break into places, and yeah, we don't get to take dust, but we still get to break in, and there's lock picking, and there's, you know, jumping walls and all of these things. But there's also what is perceived as to be the sort of more mundane parts of the job. And it's fishing. You're like, oh, you wrote a fish, like, congratulations. But what Chris has done is to sort of categorize social engineering and say, here is one broad category and it's fishing, but it can be so powerful, so let me teach you. And then he's done that sort of across the board. And I do think that Chris is sort of going to be the grandfather. He will hate to hear that, but the grandfather of social engineering. I really do. And I'm no longer sort of with Chris's company. But I can't imagine a company doing what he does much better than him in terms of vishing and fishing. He really does it well.
Yeah, when I first started doing any kind of social engineering, one of my teammates at the company I was consulting at recommended Chris's books, and that's where I got started.
Yeah. Is that how you came to be in the ILF? Through reading his books?
No, actually, I guess one of the first or probably up to one of the first or second DEF CONs I went to, which first one was in 2018. That's how I kind of got connected, and I knew some people in there too. I don't know what she wants people to know her real name, but the pseudo-fed, I remember.
Oh,
When she was right before she become, you know, her first DEF CON, she wasn't in the security industry. And then she ended up going to work for Chris and was involved with ILF. And actually, I guess Rachel Toback is how I found out about ILF.
Yeah. I haven't met Rachel. I don't know her, but I've only heard good things. So I'm going to have to reach out at some point, I think.
Because I'd followed her on Twitter. And in like 2018, she was doing like a fundraiser for WISP, Women in Information and Security and Privacy.
Yeah.
And I was doing things to try to help. I did some t-shirt fundraisers to try to help that out. And I remember during one of her presentations, I remember somewhere someone mentioned Innocent Lives Foundation, but totally forgot the name. And then she was doing a talk or somewhere, and I found out about Innocent Lives. And so then I kind of directed my fundraising efforts to Innocent Lives Foundation. So that's how I got involved.
Nice. It's a good organization. There's also the, I'm gonna screw up the acronym. I'm gonna have to write it or say it out. The National Child Task Safety. Dear God. Yes. Yeah. Do you know it?
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Also a very good organization. Can you help me say it?
Yeah. It's National Child. It's NCTF or something like that.
Yeah. But, oh my God, this is terrible. I put them in the book. Oh God.
But I got to meet Kevin. I guess he's the founder at he's out of Arkansas at the last DerbyCon. ILF had a reception. I got to meet him.
The last DerbyCon. I think I have it in here. I'm gonna look.
What's really cool is the stuff that they do, though. Listen to their stories that they're not just trying to unmask child predators. No. They're going in and getting people, and whether it's legal or not, and I think that's pretty cool.
What they've done sort of differently, without giving too much away, is to sort of build in, what do you call them? Sort of different, oh my God, you're going to have to edit this. They have built in different sections of the company, so, or of the organization, so that, you know, they do OSINT only, and that's like, hey, if you want to do that, go over here and do this. And if you want to, you know, there's a lot of different things that they have, and all roads lead to hopefully someone getting arrested. So there's a lot of helpers doing a lot of different things, and they get there quickly through critical mass and just through sheer determination. But they've broken what needs to be done down into different tasks. So it's really an interesting organization. I think that they will, I hope that they receive a lot of funding and a lot of help.
Yeah, it's kind of good that they're getting some exposure through ILF. So it's the National Child Protection Task Force.
Yeah, there we go. Yes. Thank you. Also a really good organization. And I don't really know of other organizations with that objective in mind. ILF and those guys are the only people that I know of. But whoever's doing that, I think, deserves some social attention and support for sure.
Yeah, and that's one of the good things about those organizations is just bringing awareness, you know, letting people know that they're out there to help and try to help possibly fund those organizations.
Yes, absolutely. Agreed.
Because I think there was even a bigger need for that type of thing during the pandemic when children were on their computers more, on their devices. Yeah. And
it's such a strange sort of time because you know, not to age myself, but I didn't have a mobile phone growing up or a cell phone growing up. And I think when I first got a computer, the most amazing thing that was on it was MSN chat, or whatever that was called back then. And the rest of the time you played Snake on your Nokia. So you really had to be abducted physically, and at least as I remember my childhood, in order for some of, you know, the worst things that can happen to a child to happen, or a family member, which typically, I think, statistically is the most likely thing to happen to you. It's someone you know. It's not a stranger. There's actually a really good book. Of course, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a really good book. I think it's by Gavin DeBecker, maybe. It's called The Gift, actually, and it talks about, hey, look, here's what to look for as a parent. Here's what to look for if you're worried about your child being in any way sort of molested or groomed, because there actually are telltale signs. And hey, it's probably not going to be a stranger. It's statistically most likely to be someone that you know or a family member. And then he talks about, you know, of course, the internet matters and those sorts of things do happen. But you can also get ahead of that in terms of, you know, outsmarting your kids a little bit. You have to become more technologically advanced, I suppose, but you really can. There's a lot of things that you can do to prevent this to the best of your abilities as a parent. I think the ILF may have some sort of educational material on that, at least when I was there they did. It's probably on their website, which of course I can't remember the name of. InnocentLives.org, maybe?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so yeah. So we have very much, you know, veered off course, but
that's okay.
Hopefully,
it's a good cause. Good to get the word out for those organizations.
Yes, for sure.
So maybe back on topic on your book, is there anything you'd like to share more about your book? And kind of just a question: how does it differ from like Chris's books? How does your book differ?
Chris's books talk mainly about social engineering, and for most of them, maybe not the last one, the human hacking one, that's broad, but the rest of them talk specifically about components of social engineering. This book is for anybody within the industry that is looking to think a certain way. So it's not just for social engineers, because you can be a social engineer without any semblance of attacker mindset. You can actually be a pen tester, a network pen tester, without any understanding of how an attacker thinks. Because, and one of the things the book talks about is critical thinking, linear thinking, and non-linear thinking. So in any case, if you want to be a social engineer, if you want to be a pen tester, if you want to be just a blue teamer, whatever it is that you want to do within the industry, you'll need critical thinking, right? You need it to be able to solve problems. You need it just to be able to logically flow through some of the objectives that you'll get. But also what an attacker needs is an understanding of non-linear thinking. So not every problem can be solved by starting at the start of it. It's the story that I like to use to sort of depict it is, if someone said to you, okay, you have to get over this 20-foot wall and you don't have any ladders and you don't have any rope, you might try running up it, you might try whatever it is that you're going to try. Did the word "get over the wall" lead you astray? Because you can probably go under it. So that's sort of non-linear thinking, and I touch upon those sorts of things within the book. It's about sort of being able to take seemingly unrelated things, items, topics, and free associate so that you can sort of make connections between them, because we have to be able to do that as attackers. And the book sort of really talks to that and makes that clear, I suppose. So mine and Chris's books differ in terms of what we're actually covering and who we are talking to. And he was the technical editor on the book, so he sort of had some really good points within the book that were mainly related to social engineering. And he helped me just sort of get the book ready for social engineers, for network pen testers and things like that. He was actually really helpful on the editing of the book.
Very cool. And one of the things too, even I know the books are not the same, but one of the things to keep in mind, I think it's good to have different books out there too, is some people's point of view people understand better than someone else's. You know, you say for something sure. just a certain way that someone gets.
I absolutely think that. I think what Chris does really well actually with books is to talk in a way that absolutely anyone could understand. His motto, which is not mine, which is going to make me sound like a terrible person, is to like leave people feeling better off for having met you. That's his goal and his objective as a social engineer. And it's not mine. Mine's is really data driven. It's not about how I'm leaving them feeling per se. It's about the objective. But what he does is to really take something and, I want to say, water it down. That sounds mean, and I actually don't mean it to be. He takes concepts that might scare people off and brings them mainstream. This book, the Attacker Mindset book, it's trying to bring that concept mainstream, but there's so much there that it actually needs to be three or four books talking about the different components of the mindset, because there was a lot to fit into this book. And I think your first question to me was, tell us how it was to write a book. And I don't think I answered that. So what I'm going to do is answer it now. It was difficult because there's a certain sort of, you know, thinning out of information that you have to do. You can't just ramble for four books worth of pages. So I had to take the core concepts, the core laws, and cognitive skills, try and fit them in here, and I hope it's worked. The feedback is that it's worked, but yes, it's an interesting book, I think, in terms of what it encompasses, because there's just so much in a mindset. If you picture yourself having to write down your mindset, like, you'd think it would take a lifetime. So it was difficult, and I had about 8 weeks to do it. So
it was, oh wow, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, I think Wiley hates me. They were like, yeah, if you can do it in 8 weeks, we'll take it, and hoping, like, just thinking she'll never do it, she'll never manage. And 8 weeks later, I was like, here we go. And then and then it got sent to a round of editors, including Chris. So yeah.
Oh, very cool.
So, is there anything that I didn't cover? And I know I rambled a lot.
You covered it pretty good, but one of the things I would like to get your advice on is a lot of people, you know, listen to this podcast are trying to get started. Is there any advice that you would share with anyone wanting to get started?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a few things I would say. One is that there is no social engineering, for one, is quite a new industry. Network pen testing or app pen testing or just pen testing, they have sort of stronger legs. There are more ways that are, there's process-driven ways to get into those. If you don't want to follow those, then there are 100 other different ways. So I have a very different, you will never be able to copy my route into here. And I quickly learned that as I was trying to get in, I'm not going to be able to emulate someone else's route. I'm going to have to take my own sort of thing. And I think that's number one thing to keep in your mind. There's no right or wrong way to do it. There's just trying to do it. If I had never have met Chris, if he had have never given me a job, I think what I would have done would have been to start a company and offer my services just to other companies, just say, hey, would you like to partner up with me? If they're not taken on, if they can't take on people at time, just offer them your services as a contractor. If they can't do that, then leave your name with them. They might come back to you. Be involved in the community. People, this community is so small, but so helpful. It's sort of small and mighty all at once. I've never been turned away for help. I went to Tanya Janica, how you say her name? Yep. And asked for help. Now, she's never met me. She doesn't know me. And I asked her for a couple of things and she was like, absolutely. And she got back to me straight away. That's pretty anecdotal, of course, but I've never been turned away for help in this community. So if you're looking for something and you're serious about it, and I think that's the caveat here, that's the catch point. You have to be serious. I would say, just out of respect for people, not to bother them unless you are seriously trying to get into work. The other thing, and it's really a point for everyone and a point of hope, is that we are understaffed. We need people within this industry in all parts of it, in the ethical network pen testing, in social engineering, in red teams, blue teams, doesn't matter where it falls in the industry, we need people. We're understaffed. So if you can get educated, then you probably, you know, apply to a lot of places, and the likelihood is that you get a job. And the other thing I would say is I went to PwC in Australia as a graduate. I went onto their graduate team and I was 10 years older than everyone else because I was an old graduate. I'd worked offshore for 10 years. So there's a little bit of, you know, when I was going into that job, I was thinking, oh God, this is going to be embarrassing. I don't know what 20-year-olds are like anymore, and oh no, they're just like me at 20, which honestly is not that good. They were really like quick, and I was like, having to work at double the pace just to keep up with them. But there is an element of that, especially if you're getting in later. And it sort of just takes a little bit of humility, I guess, to be able to say, okay, I'm going to do it anyway. I come from a really small town in Scotland, and there was like this 80-year-old, 75-year-old woman who went back to college, and the youth, I love calling them the youths of the time were sort of couldn't understand it. And of course she was like sort of ridiculed in a way, which is cruel, but Scottish people have terrible senses of terrible personalities. So she was doing it. She was there, and looking back now, I'm like, God, I'm probably going to be that person. So it's never too late. That's definitely one thing. And you can do it at any age. You can do it any time. And this is a great time to do it. You get to work from home. So get in now. Yes. I hope that was helpful and not just a ramble.
No, that was good. Like I said, you know, these different stories, people resonate with different people. Right. And the thing is, there's going to be someone out there, or people that, you know, what you're saying is going to help them. So thanks for sharing that advice.
So the last thing I'll say on it is that I have used my computer science degree about zero times. It's not the thing that I, you know, go back to in my mind when I'm trying to hack anything physical or logical. You can get much of the same information without any degree in computer science. I went and took a long arduous course in quantum computing. Also did not help me. So I think for some of us in the industry, our resumes or CVs look and sound really cool. It doesn't matter. It's not the point. We got here somehow, and if I didn't have computer science on my resume and I didn't have quantum computing, I would still be social engineering. So I hope people don't get put off by the education that they don't have, and I hope they make the most of the education that's actually out there. So one of the things that I did and I love was an online, it's not a course per se, it's like a structured pen testing site. It's called, help me, what's it called? It's called, I have to look up.
So thinking of degrees and education stuff, so someone like doing what you're doing, if someone with a psychology degree may be better,
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Like, especially for social engineering. Yeah. If you have any sort of anthropological bone in your body, you know, social engineering becomes very easy. It is what you need for social engineering more than sort of anything else is a high EQ. So if you have that, you're already better than most of us. Pen tester labs. I started out with pen tester labs just to keep going. I love
that's a good one.
Labs. It's so good.
A good one.
It really is good. That would be one. I recommend that to everybody. If you're working your way up to OSCP, I would go to pen tester labs. I really like that whole just environment.
Yeah, that's a good one. And Lewis, the guy that runs that, is out of Australia, and. Mm-hmm. And he's a really nice giving guy. He gives away the subscriptions for different conferences and different giveaways people do. I was running a bug bounty summit for Texas. That wasn't Texas Cyber Summit. It was for the Grey Hat conference last year.
Yeah.
And I was looking for prizes, and he gave me some subscriptions to give out for the winners. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, he is really an interesting guy. I've had limited communications with him, but I follow him and sort of follow Pentester Labs, and he does actually seem really nice. Again, the community sort of never fails. It's how you ask and why you're asking. You know, if you ask respectfully and if you're asking because you're serious, I think most of the community will give and help. And I don't know if that's said about every industry. I'm not sure if it seems like, you know, a platitude or an overused or really a lie, but my honest understanding and experience of this community is that if you ask, you know, you will be helped. So that is absolutely the way in. Come, just barge your way into the community. We'll give you a job. It's fine. But yeah.
Well, we're getting down towards the end of the show. Is there anything you'd like to share before we end?
I don't think so. I feel like it's one of those things, the problem with podcasts for ambiverts, like me, sort of right in the middle of that spectrum, is you never know if you're talking too much or if you're talking too little. So I will go with the maybe I've talked too much and just be quiet. So nah,
you did great. You did great.
Thanks so much for having me. It was really nice. Nice Sunday morning. Okay. Hello, world.
Excellent. It's an honor having you on the show.
No, not at all. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you on the next episode.
Bye.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itsbmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.